Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, before we do get started, we do want to let you know about our listener support campaign, our twice annual campaign to help support the show, and I want to appreciate everybody who has given so far, including Dave, who sent along a donation. We'll be sending along access to our premium site, which we do with all donations of $7 or more. In addition, during our listener support campaign, all donations of $20 or more will receive an extra special thank you gift. At the $20 level, we will send everyone a free copy of All I Needed to Know, I Learned from Columbo, the digital book, at no cost to them. In addition, we'll send one other item. At the $20 level, we have one the great Colonial Radio Theater Perry Mason dramas, including the first five Perry Mason books by Earl Stanley Gardner. You can choose any one of the five that they have produced. Or their Father Brown stories. That's at the $20 level. At the $100 level, we have something I think listeners of this show will enjoy, and that is a copy of the Who Is Johnny Dollar Matter by John Abbott, one of the three volumes in there. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that. That's available to folks in the U.S. and Canada, and it's one of the definitive research books on yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and I use it while I'm recording the show. One nice feature is it includes scripts of, summaries of most of the lost episodes, and that's helped us a couple of times. So we'll talk a little bit more about that because I needed to use that book for some of the post-show commentary. And after we finish the commentary, be sure to listen as we'll announce what new shows will be coming to Wednesday in the next season on the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. So here now is The Bennett Matter, Parts 3 and 4.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Andrew Cord, Johnny.
How's it going, Andy?
All the police have been talking to that arsonist, George Foley, all night long. He won't admit a thing. Won't talk about anything. They're wondering now how long they can hold him.
He's the man who fired that building, Andy.
Well, we've got to have something more for the district attorney, Johnny. We haven't tied Foley to Bennett at all. If we can definitely charge him with firing that building, then we'll have a lever to go after Bennett.
I got an idea.
What?
Meet you in an hour.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Four State Fire Insurance Corporation, 4065 Spear Boulevard, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Bennett arson matter. Expense account item 6, $1, two drinks. Andrew Cord and myself in Cookie's Place, a half a block from San Francisco's Hall of Justice. Andy's a good insurance man, thorough.
Well, it's pretty certain they'll have to release Foley unless he admits something, or we can find more evidence against him.
How about Bennett?
Still no word. Johnny, you can see what we're up against.
Yeah. Want one?
No, thanks, Johnny. It's for a while.
Listen, we had this case tied into Tony Midas until he turned up dead. A vengeance motive against Bennett for sending him to prison 5 years ago.
Yeah?
All right, now we know it wasn't Midas, and we're sure it's this George Foley. At least according to Bill Underwood, and Bill certainly knows the arson racket.
Yeah, no man better.
All right, then. Who shot Bennett?
Oh, I don't know, Johnny, but that's not our worry at the
think,
moment.
Think, Andy, think. It might have been Foley. It couldn't have been Midas. But there is someone else.
You mean Bennett's niece?
Sure, his niece. She had a reason because of what Bennett did to Midas, who was her husband. And she's got a reason to help us.
Yeah, but nobody can find her. Nobody knows where she is.
They'll find her. And I want to make a deal.
You what?
Sure. If I find her, I'll ask her what information she can give us about Bennett and Foley. Possibly she has something. She said she did once. Now look, if she shot her uncle, she'll have to stand for assault and attempt to kill. Can we give her legal help in her case?
Johnny, I don't know.
I want to know if I can promise her that if I see her. Can I?
Well, you can tell her that we'll do what we can, the very best that we can.
Okay, good. Want another drink?
No, thanks, John.
All right, I'll try and get in touch with Elizabeth Bennett.
How? The police haven't gotten anywhere.
Oh, I've been here 2 days, and I got friends all over this town. Expense account item 7, $1.05, cab fare. From the Hall of Justice to the apartment house of Marty Engel, lawyer, philosopher, and egg poacher.
Again?
Yeah. You better close that door and lock it, Mr. Engel.
It's awful late for this. Are you drunk?
Nope.
Locked. Now what?
You asked me if I ever found Tony Midas to tell you about it. We found him, Mr. Engel. He's dead.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. And he didn't do any of the things we thought he might have done. I'm here to find out what you might have done.
How did he die?
Tuberculosis. He's had it for 2 years. Didn't know.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know about it.
I don't know how to figure you, Engel. I haven't been able to ever since I met you. Doesn't make any difference what I think of you, but it does make a difference how you answer one question. A lot of difference to you.
What is it?
Did you help Arnold Bennett frame Tony Midas and send him up to San Quentin?
You say Tony is dead. Now, what difference...
Did you help Bennett frame him?
No, I told you I defended Tony Midas in court. I tried my best to get him off. That's the truth.
You're sure of that?
I'm an honest man, if not a successful one. I told you the truth.
All right, then. If that's the truth, you're not in any trouble and you can unlock that door. But if it's not the truth, you might get yourself killed.
Why do you say that?
Because somebody took a shot at Arnold Bennett last night. But he was lucky. It didn't kill him, but it came pretty near. You know who that somebody was?
Elizabeth.
That's a good guess. She hasn't got anything to lose now. She lost her husband. She might be out getting even for him if he was framed. And she thinks you helped frame him.
I tell you, I didn't frame him. I defended him. I think Bennett stacked everything against him. I told you that once. I think Midas was an innocent man, but there was nothing I could do.
Oh, wait a minute.
What?
Shh. Who are you expecting?
No one.
Ask who it is. Go ahead, ask who it is.
Who is it?
Elizabeth Bennett, Mr. Engel.
Tell her just a minute.
Just a minute, Elizabeth.
Okay, over there. Go on, get down fast.
All right, all right.
No, you don't!
Engel, call the police. Hold it. Hold it, Elizabeth. Hold it up. Are you hurt?
You?
Are you hurt?
No, I'm all right. Did I kill him? Did I kill him?
No, Elizabeth, you didn't kill him.
He ought to be dead.
You don't know what you're talking about. He didn't have anything to do with framing Tony. He just told me.
Then he was lying. He should be dead. He and my uncle.
None of this will bring Tony back to you. Come on now. Come on. Let's get back.
How many tramps have you met in your life, Mr. Dollar?
A few. Come on. Come on.
When you met my Uncle Arnold, you met a real one. He stole money from himself and made it look like Tony did it. And that one in there helped him. Why didn't you let me kill him?
You're wrong about Engel. He didn't help your uncle. He tried to help Tony, honestly.
Then I'm glad I didn't kill him. How's my uncle?
He's getting better.
Will he go to prison?
We have to prove he hired somebody to fire the office building.
He hired George Foley. I know that.
Would you swear to
yes.
it?
Yes.
Can you?
Yes. He blamed it on Tony. When I went over to see Tony last month in the prison hospital, he was dying. Oh, I knew it. He had that look in his eyes. Helpless. And he knew what my uncle had done to him, and he couldn't do anything about it.
But you figured you could. You shot your uncle when you found out Tony was dead. And you came here to kill Engel.
I thought he helped Uncle Arnold send Tony to prison. I thought he helped kill Tony. They did kill him, you know, when they sent him to prison. They killed him as surely as if they'd shot him down. 5 years I waited for Tony to get out of that awful place. I waited to hold him in my arms and tell him it was all over. 5 years I waited to help him forget his hate and my hate. For loving him so much every day that... Now he's dead. What can you or I or anybody do about what they've done to Tony? Look at me, Mr. Dollar. I'm not what you'd call beautiful. I'm not even pretty. Nobody ever looked at me twice until Tony. He looked at me and he loved me. And now he's dead. And I'm dead inside. I'm dead inside, and I'll be glad when I'm dead outside.
Shooting in this neighborhood?
Wait a minute, officer.
What's that?
No one's hurt. Come on, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Bennett made a statement down at the Hall of Justice admitting she fired a shot at Arnold Bennett, hoping to kill him. She also admitted the assault on the lawyer, Marty Engel. Charges were immediately filed, and she was held in the women's section of the city jail. In a separate statement, she told how she had seen Arnold Bennett meet George Foley in a downtown bar. Foley still maintained that he had nothing to do with the fire in the Bennett building and denied any connection with Arnold Bennett. I gave Elizabeth Bennett's statement to Andy Cord, and he took it to the assistant district attorney. I was still in the Hall of Justice when Marty Engel came in.
Dollar?
Oh, hello, Mr. Engel.
How is Elizabeth?
They're holding her.
I'm not going to press any charges.
Well, that's pretty decent of you, Mr. Engel.
She's a pretty unhappy girl. I'd like to help her.
Her uncle will probably press charges against her.
I'd like to defend her.
What?
She needs a lawyer. I didn't do very well for her husband. Maybe I can do better for her.
I hope so.
Funny world, isn't it?
Not tonight, it isn't.
No, I guess not. Yeah. Well, I'll see you, Mr. Dollar.
Right.
Johnny?
Oh, Andy, hi.
Kid, you ought to pat yourself on the back. They're going to go ahead against George Foley for the arson job.
Enough for them now, huh?
That's a pretty good case against him, whether he opens up and talks or not.
A statement from him would still be better.
Always. But he's been around, Johnny. He hasn't given anybody the time of day yet.
Yeah.
Oh, about Elizabeth Bennett. I can arrange counsel for her.
She's already got a lawyer, Andy.
Okay, then we'll pay his fee.
He doesn't want any fee.
What's the matter, kid?
Boy... Maybe all this has been a little too much. Hey, what time is it?
10:15.
There's a plane out at midnight. If you don't need me anymore, I think I'll be getting back to Hartford.
Sure, Johnny. Sure, I'll look after things here.
Expense account item 7, $49.65, hotel and meals in San Francisco. Item 8, same as item 3, transportation back to Hartford. I caught the midnight plane. It was in Hartford at 2 o'clock the next afternoon. I went directly to my apartment and went to bed. I was awakened the following morning about 7 o'clock. What the... Johnny Dollar.
San Francisco calling Mr. Dollar.
Okay.
Is this Mr. Dollar?
Yes, yes.
Mr. Andrew Cord is calling. One moment, please. Go ahead, please.
Johnny?
Hi.
Can you come back to San Francisco right away?
Can I... Well, I just got home.
We need you again. Jake Eggleston is going to defend Foley in court.
Eggleston?
He's already got him out on a writ.
What?
This case is worth $500,000 to us, Johnny. If anything happens that Foley gets off, we won't have a chance to get Bennett.
You sound scared.
I am. Somehow, Bennett's holding the best cards again.
We got a good case against Foley. Once that's settled, we can get Bennett.
I want to make sure.
Okay, I'll get the first plane.
Thanks, Johnny.
Even as I hung up the phone, I was thinking of Marty Engel's words. You'll never get Arnold Bennett. He's too good for you, Dollar. Too good for your insurance company, your fire investigators, everybody. No stronger man ever lived, he said. And somebody had to prove Engel was wrong. Johnny Dollar.
Andrew Cord, Johnny. Did you have a nice trip back here to Frisco?
I slept most of the way. How's it going?
Good and bad, Johnny. Good that we've got George Foley on trial for setting fire to the building. Bad that we haven't connected him to Bennett yet, and Bennett's the guy we want.
Well, once you get a conviction on Foley, you can go after Bennett.
A lot of expert testimony's been thrown around here, and the jury's been sleeping through most of it. Besides that, Foley's got one of the best defense men in the business, Jake Eggleston.
Yeah, I've heard of him. He's pretty slick.
He's going to make us lose this case, Johnny.
Not if I can help it. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Four State Fire Insurance Corporation, 4065 Spear Boulevard, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Bennett matter. Expense account item 9, $124. Air transportation, Hartford, back to San Francisco again. And the Bennett case, which I thought was finished with. I was at the Hall of Justice by 9:30. I met Andrew Cord outside of the Superior Court.
This may be the last day of the trial, Johnny.
Anything new since I talked to you on the phone, Andy?
Well, I may be worrying for nothing, since Finley's handled it all pretty well for the state. He's one of the assistant DAs, but Foley's still holding on to a not guilty plea.
Well, isn't that just coaching?
Well, maybe. But you remember, Foley didn't make any statement when we took him, and the police got nothing out of him at all.
Foley had something like 28 arrests besides two convictions. He knew the ropes.
Yeah. Well, that's okay, yeah?
Sure. Oh, just in time.
Yeah, seems to be the clerk now.
Yeah.
Court is now in session. His Honor, Judge William J. Bainbridge presiding. Everybody stand. Be seated. John Dollar.
Hey.
Well, I didn't think they'd call you first.
No.
Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
Be seated.
As you know, I'm Charles Finley with the District Attorney's Office. State your name, please.
Johnny Dollar.
State your occupation, please.
I'm an insurance investigator.
How long have you been engaged in your profession as an insurance investigator?
10 years or more.
Tell us, please, prior to that, what kind of work did you do?
I was in the United States Marine Corps for 4 years. Before that, I was Detective Sergeant Second Grade with the New York Police Department.
Do you have any papers or letters in your possession that verify your professional status, Mr. Dollar?
Yes, I do. I have letters of reliability from 13 insurance companies and adjustment bureaus I've been associated with, and my record as police officer.
Thank you. Will the court clerk please hand these papers to counsel for the defense so he may examine them?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Now, tell us what your connection with this case is, Mr. Dollar.
I was employed by the Four State Fire Insurance Corporation of Hartford, Connecticut, to conduct an investigation in regard to one of their policyholders.
Arnold Bennett.
Yes, Arnold Bennett.
Will you please tell the court what the results of that investigation were?
The Bennett building was destroyed by fire. I worked with arson experts from my own organization and with the police here to determine the cause of the fire.
Go on, please.
At the scene of the fire, our expert, William Underwood, located certain items which we recognized as part of the paraphernalia generally used by professional arsonists.
Will you please state what those items were?
A scrap of celluloid and a paraffin wick.
Anything else?
Samples of the ashes, which were later analyzed and proved to be celluloid ashes.
I wish to remind the ladies and gentlemen of the jury that the public fire adjuster, the gentleman from the Skyline Laboratories, and the two gentlemen from the Fire Inspection Department have previously testified as to the identity and uses of these items. Will you continue, Mr. Dollar?
Well, these particular items suggested that the fire was of an incendiary origin. The next problem was to establish the exact method used in starting the fire.
Were you able to determine that method?
Yes, sir.
In order to refresh the minds of the jury, would you mind describing what was established?
A heavy woolen wick.
This one, Mr. Dollar?
That one, or one like it.
Exhibit C. Please continue.
This wick had been soaked in paraffin and then stuffed into a paper sack that was filled with celluloid. It's a simple method. The wick is lit and takes anywhere from 3 to 10 minutes to burn down to the celluloid. Now, once that happens, the celluloid flares up and fires anything combustible in the vicinity.
And that is the method you determined caused the fire in the Bennett building?
Yes. And I'd like to qualify that by saying the arson experts from my own company and the gentleman from the police and fire departments here in San Francisco determined it definitely.
Mr. Dollar, by this means, you connected the defendant, George Foley, with the fire you were investigating.
Yes, we did.
How?
George Foley improvised the method I have just described.
Improvised? You mean it is his method?
I object, Your Honor. The prosecution is putting words into the mouth of the witness.
I'll rephrase for Mr. Eggleston. Is this method identifiable with the defendant?
Yes, sir.
Will you explain the identification?
The police files here show that Foley has been convicted of setting 2 other fires in this state. On both occasions, he employed that method of fire.
Your Honor, I object.
The career of the defendant as a professional arsonist is a matter of public record.
The defendant's previous record has no bearing on this case. I object.
Mr. Dollar, will you rephrase and delete any reference to the defendant's criminal history?
The procedure in locating an arsonist is to first establish the method of operation. In this case, where the wick celluloid method was used, the defendant's name came up immediately. The defendant made an attempt to call on Arnold Bennett in the hospital. The defendant was positively identified by 3 witnesses as the man they had seen near the Bennett building prior to the fire.
I remind the jury of the testimony of those witnesses. Go on, Mr. Dollar.
The police crime laboratory examined all of the clothing Foley was wearing at the time of his arrest and all of the clothing in his room. There was definite evidence that he had been in the Bennett building.
Will you tell us what sort of evidence, please?
Well, paint smudges on the soles of his shoes and metal filings in cuffs of his trousers, compared with samples that were still available in the building where certain painting and metalwork had been in progress.
You connected him with the improvised method of firing. You proved that paint smudges and metal filings came from the Bennett building. The defendant attempted to contact Arnold Bennett. What else?
Arnold Bennett's niece, Elizabeth Bennett, informed me that her uncle, Arnold Bennett, hired the defendant to fire the building to collect insurance. I was on the stand all the rest of the morning. When Finley ended his questioning, he turned me over to defense counsel Eggleston. Eggleston contested every bit of established testimony and recommended that my remarks be stricken from the trial records. The summations came right after that, and then the case went to the jury. Expense account item 10, $3, lunch for Andrew Cord and myself.
Foley has to be convicted or we'll be on the defense when Bennett's insurance claim comes to court, and we'll probably get stuck with it.
Hey, while the jury's out, why don't I go over to the jail and talk with Foley?
Well, what good would that do, John?
Well, Foley must know they'll give him the works if he admits something.
He'll admit nothing. He sits there in court like they were talking about someone else. Oh, Johnny, it's too late.
Yeah, but if he did, you could go ahead and file criminal charges against Bennett. Beat him to the punch.
Well, I'd like that.
Oh, we get Foley and we've beaten Bennett, and I like that. The job of getting to a prisoner who's standing trial isn't an easy one, especially when he's under the surveillance of a smart defense attorney like Eggleston. I talked to Judge Bainbridge in his chambers and told him what I had in mind. I broke down the case against Foley as the insurance company saw it, and the possible case against Arnold Bennett if Foley was found guilty. Judge Bainbridge arranged for me to see Foley. He was sitting on his cot. Eggleston was standing nearby.
Hello, Dollar.
Hello, Eggleston.
Hi, what do you want?
Well, I thought we ought to talk about this thing while there's still time. If it's okay with you, Mr. Eggleston.
It's okay with me, Dollar.
I'll be right here.
Still time for what?
To get your point of a break, Foley.
Oh, that's a real good one, that is. You sit on a witness chair all morning, you tell them what a bad boy I am, then you walk in here and tell them you want to give me a break.
I do.
Go away.
Now, wait a minute, George. It won't hurt to listen to him.
Oh, you're a great one, you. I'm the guy who's sitting in this cell. Both of you can walk out of here and have a good steak for dinner tonight.
All right, George. Listen to him. This isn't a courtroom.
When you were first hauled in, Foley, you could have made a statement telling us Bennett hired you to fire that building, waived a jury trial, and thrown yourself on the mercy of the court. But you didn't do that. You made everybody work hard to give it to you. And that's exactly what they're going to do. That jury will come out pretty soon and throw the book at you.
Is that true?
I'm not so sure of that, Dollar. Tell us precisely why you're here.
You both know my company's after Arnold Bennett. He's filed claim against us for not paying off his fire policy. Foley, we know he hired you to fire that building.
Yeah?
And if you're smart, you'll send for the guard and make a request for the court to come back in session before the jury returns. You can tell them Bennett hired you. You can change your plea to guilty and throw yourself on the mercy of the court. It'll probably save you 5 years on your sentence.
And so I turn hero and make everything nice for you to go after Bennett.
If you do that, his claim will be thrown out to the insurance commissioner and we'll prefer charges against him.
And he'd be right up there with me, huh? Making little ones out of big ones.
That's right.
You're overstepping your province here, Dollar.
Oh, now look, there isn't much time.
Dollar,
Foley, this man can advise you to wait until the jury comes in, and that won't be very long. But then it'll be too late for you to help yourself.
I don't like this high-pressure stuff.
I don't care what you like or dislike, Mr. Eggleston. Now listen, Foley. They've got an 8-point case against you in there.
Is he right, Eggleston?
It doesn't make any difference. The jury decides.
You say it saved me 5 years on my sentence.
Yes.
George,
what do you think?
Up to you, George. I've told you what I think.
Ah, swell spot, swell.
Oh, come on, come on. What is it?
I'll risk it.
You're crazy.
There's a chance those 12 clunkheads will walk out and tell everybody I'm not guilty. Come on, get out.
Those last 5 years will be pretty hard ones. Guard. Guard.
Thank you for the offer just the same, Dollar.
You don't use your head much, Foley.
If it hadn't been for you, I wouldn't be in here. So don't worry too much about what happens to me.
If it weren't for guys like you, I wouldn't be in business. And I'm not worried.
Dollar.
Yeah?
Yeah, I hope they let me loose on this one. For your sake.
Don't plan on it.
On account of, I'd like to kill you or something.
Now, here's our star to tell you about the final intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, a verdict in and out of a courtroom. The wind-up. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, the phrase, no love lost comes to mind for that, very intense encounter between Johnny and the arsonist. Definitely, I think, a good highlight. I love the overall take of it. To me, the big nagging doubt in this whole scenario is that the niece, who's definitely got a grudge, is the person who the prosecution case really rests on. And whether the jury picks up on that, I think is going to be an interesting question when we find out what the verdict is on Friday. I definitely sympathize with Johnny. You know, that's rough. You know, you fly home and immediately you hop a plane to go back across the country to where you were. Definitely not a fun experience. Even flying back 3 days later, which was my latest flight this past month, not a fun experience. On the bright side, it was on the insurance company's dime. I love the professional testimony. You know, Johnny testifying as an expert really established his bona fides. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in just a second, because there's actually quite a few details on there. But before we let the time get away from us, I need to let you know what programs we're going to bring you next season on the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. There are two types of programs. First of all, we are going to have one more situation that we will need to address, where there's a missing episode, or in one case, there's a non-part episode. In those cases, we have the Friday episode with two, and then Wednesday, as we did with the McLean matter, we play a special or we play another series. So we're going to have a couple specials thrown into the mix here. But I do want to let you know, you will get to hear another one-shot series. This one is starring Frank Lovejoy, and the title is Here Comes McBride. And then once we finish all of the five-part Johnny Dollars, Wednesdays will become dedicated to the adventures of Philip Marlowe, which is one of the best detective series ever done on radio. And certainly, I would say the best in the hard-boiled genre. Many would disagree, but that's my personal favorite. Okay, well, now, on to the testimony. It was somewhat interesting just because it kind of contradicted what we heard back during the Edmund O'Brien years, that Johnny Dollar was a Pinkerton man. That's absent from his bio here. I went and I double-checked in John Abbott, who is Johnny Dollar matter, and it was the story that he began his career as a Pinkerton. Since it wasn't mentioned, I guess that's been wiped out. Not surprising in a way. Continuity was not as big a deal. And particularly with Johnny Dollar, which had so many writers, and that was said, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, at this point in the story. Beyond the fact that he served in the Marines, according to Abbott, there's really not any real mention of his military service, other than from a Charles Russell Johnny Dollar episode that Johnny served in the China-Burma-India theater during the war. There's also some suggestions in later episodes that he knows how to fly. That doesn't necessarily, wouldn't necessarily have, and scuba dive wouldn't necessarily have come from the military. I do kind of find it surprising that he is portrayed as a member of the NYPD, because he's been in New York quite a few times, and I'm, you know, already referring to his to the Bob Bailey years, and you know, he's never indicated that he's got a people he knows from the old days on the force, which would be somewhat typical, or like a special knowledge of the city. I will say that having John Abbott's Johnny Dollar book around has actually been pretty helpful as I've worked on the show, and just a really neat fan resource. He's got list of how many times Johnny Dollar was shot, some pretty unique indexing of expense accounts, and recaps of the cases, which are sometimes helpful because I will sometimes say, okay, did I actually hear that? And get some clarification from the book to verify that I'm hearing correctly. Because sometimes due to bad audio, it can be hard to tell, but he went through the actual scripts. So if you would like to receive a copy as part of the listener support campaign for a donation of $100 or more as your thank you gift if you're in the USA or Canada, we'll send you your choice of volumes 1, 2, or 3. Volume 1 covers the introduction, a lot of overview of the series, and all of the pre-Bob Bailey episodes that were aired. Volume 2 is the biggest one. That's got all the Bob Bailey episodes in it. And Volume 3, that includes the post-Bob Bailey episodes, the auditions, as well as some miscellaneous information and indexes. And for 200 donations of $250 or more, we can send you all three. John Beck emails in. We turn out listener comments and feedback. As a listener of the original Johnny Dollar Show and a longtime listener of your excellent Great Detective series, I've always had an interest in the musical scores associated with these shows. I rarely, if ever, hear you mention the music, so I thought you might be interested in the person who did much of the music for Bob Bailey's Johnny Dollar. As you see in the attached article, Marino went on to a very successful career in music following his contributions to the Johnny Dollar Show. And the comment, you know, and I will say that actually this is, you know, some of my favorite music for a detective series. I've heard it so many times, almost take it for granted, but really it is, you know, it's great, exciting music. It's very similar in a way to what was later used on Sea Hunt. And I also heard, I think, the exact opening score used on old episodes of Dick Tracy. And whether that was added in by syndicators or the DVD company, I'm not sure which. But it is definitely very solid music here. The information he had is actually from a blog. It's called whatbecameofjohnnydollar.blogspot.com. And just maintains some, you know, whatever little tidbits they can dig up. And the information they came about Amerigo Marino, who was, of course, the inspiration for the name of the Ricardo Amerigo matter. And they point out the only Johnny Dollar, that was the only Johnny Dollar case to explicitly refer to a member of the show's production crew. He was born in 1925 and worked for many years, and is somewhat unique in among the key figures of the show's mid-1950s heyday. While Bob Bailey and Jack Johnstone, for the most part, withdrew from the spotlight after the end of the golden age of radio, Amerigo arguably went on to much bigger things. In 1964, he became music director and conductor of the Alabama Symphony Orchestra, a role he held for 2 decades, during which the ensemble and Marino himself attained national acclaim. So there you go. A very talented person and a really nice, just a great, great score, I think, for Johnny Dollar that made this show just really stand out. Though I love this. This isn't actually my favorite theme. You'll get to hear that, or favorite opening. You'll get to hear that tomorrow. Speaking of that, tomorrow we bring you Nick Carter, where you'll have no new episode announcements. Everything's status quo over there. And then join us back here on Friday as we wrap up the Bennett matter and continue on with Crime for a King. In the meantime, send your comments box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. And be sure and support the listener support campaign, support.greatdetectives.net. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.